Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Crashmode GP podcast, and we are racing this week, but in the weeks that we've had off there has been, how can we put it, a lot of news, and we're here to cover that and of course give you a preview of the Grand Prix of the Americas. I'm of course joined by Pete McLaren and Rob Jones. Rob, how are we after a week off for yourself?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Nice to recharge the batteries and go again this week. I think it'll be a really, really good round of racing. America always sort of throws up an interesting race, and obviously last year Alex Rins winning on the Honda, which came out of nowhere and was sort of their only big result. So, but this year with Mark on a Ducati and it being one of his favorite circuits, I think there's a lot of storylines to follow. And obviously Fabio saying at Yamaha is something that it'll be his first race since that news broke. So a lot going on, but I think it'll be a very exciting round. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And Pete, as Rob says, you know, there's never really a week off in MotoGP or 2 weeks. There's always something happening. Plenty of big news with Liberty Media, Quartararo. What's your thoughts on that briefly?
Yeah, exactly. Some big news. Yeah, we sort of, the Liberty one has emerged, hasn't it, sort of fairly swiftly, but then we've got the confirmation now and everything else. So we'll know more on Thursday in Kota. There's going to be a press conference with the top guys from Dorna. We'll explain a bit more about what this means for MotoGP. So a few more days, we'll get to know a bit more about that. And as you say, that more of a surprise was the Quartararo news, which sort of came out of nowhere, really. I think people thought that that maybe it would, you know, he'd take a bit longer to decide, especially as, you know, there was not really the results, it seemed, to make him instantly want to sort of renew with Yamaha. But clearly, behind the scenes, he's been negotiating this, and he obviously believes in the future of what they've got planned. And we spoke about this before, didn't we? You sign on for what the bike's going to be like next year. And they've obviously, credit to Yamaha. I mean, they've got their man. They've convinced him that, look, this is where you need to be. The bike will be better. You've asked for things. We're getting it done. And he signed on the dotted line. And I'm sure a nice pay packet won't have done it any harm either. So, you know, now he's got it out of the way, isn't he? So now he can take all that contract talk is done, all that distraction. He can just focus on the rest of the season as well, which all riders like to do.
Exactly. And like you say, Pete, a nice payday as well. You know, from what we believe, it was in motorsport.com. They reported that it was around $12 million for this new salary, this new contract. And he was apparently, from this report, he was offered $4 million from Aprilia. So that's a seismic jump for Yamaha to really say, whatever your price is, there it is, and you're our guy. And it's, Rob, it's kind of similar to what we've seen with Honda, Marc Marquez, not to the extent that, you know, he's not getting whatever Marc's figure was. It was a lot, we believe, but it's showing that Yamaha are here to just say, you're our rider and you're our priority. Take over the project, essentially, and lead it.
Yeah, it's, from Yamaha especially, it's a big coup to sort of keep Quartararo, because there was a lot of rumours surrounding him and where he could go. And obviously Aprilia had sort of not come out of nowhere, but risen into maybe leading that race to sign him. That's where it might have appeared like. And then obviously he spoke about his future at the last round and sort of left it open that he did want to make a decision quickly.
Yeah.
But he wanted to make the right decision and sort of left the door open to potentially leave Yamaha. But for them, it's a big statement to retain Quattro, because we know the project hasn't been where they're used to it being and where it needs to be. You know, Yamaha, like Honda, have had a lot of success in MotoGP and a lot of recent success, if we're talking about the last 2 decades in particular. So for them to not only keep Quattro, but for Quattro, from their point of view, it's big that Quattro wants to stay, in my opinion, to know that the project isn't there right now, but to give them that confidence of saying yes, I think for Yamaha will be very motivating going forward. And I think it's a big, big signing for them.
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting one, because it took me by surprise, if I'm being totally honest. I thought, you know, from not even from Fabio's words from the preseason testing into the first few rounds, I was kind of getting the vibe that it was kind of towards the end here. And I don't really think that he was looking at the project, from what he was saying, that there was any confidence really. But it appears, Pete, that, you know, they've signed a lot of people, a lot of new engineers from Ducati, a lot of smart people, and they're saying to him, look, this is what our project is for the future. And he's obviously looked at his contract, and like I said, the money is a big aspect. It's a lot of money, and I do think to secure his own personal, you know, wealth, whatever, that's a great option to take. Do you think, you know, he's made the right choice here?
I think the thing to remember here is, compared with Mark, is Fabio's a lot younger, isn't he? He's only 24. It's a little bit of a surprise to me. He seems to be, you think he'd be a bit older than that. So he hasn't got that urgency that Mark had, has he? Where Mark was saying, look, I can't afford to keep waiting. I can't afford to be patient. Yeah. I need the bike now. Fabio, really, he can afford to wait a bit, can he? If in 2 years' time, you know, the changes that you've just listed there, Jordan, if that hasn't worked out, he'll be 26 years old. He'll still be below probably his prime. You know, usually it's late 20s, isn't it, for a rider, where everything just sort of comes together, the experience and the youth and everything sort of blends together about late 20s. So, you know, this is not by any means his last decision as far as the MotoGP team goes. He's got a long future ahead. And I suppose with that in mind, as you said about the money side of things, I'm sure it was a factor. It is for all these guys, even if it's just a number of what you mean to the team, isn't it? If you know, it's the factory in this case saying, look, this is how much we want you and believe in you, and this is what we're prepared to give you to stay with us. All those things come into play, and I think, you know, only Fabio will know what he wanted and what he was negotiating with. We hear the rumors about Aprilia, but to be honest, a lot of the Aprilia stuff, it was almost a process of elimination by everybody, all of us looking in, because it was kind of like, well, Ducati have got a load of riders. KTM have got a load of riders. Well, that just leaves Aprilia. And then it was, well, Aprilia is kind of the most similar bike, isn't it, to the Yamaha in terms of the character. So we were all sort of putting two and two together and assuming that that would be his main alternative, shall we say. It seems like, of course, there was discussions that normally riders will discuss with everybody, you know, all other teams, just to see what options are out there. How serious they were, we don't know. You know, these numbers of 4 million, that would be slightly more than I think Elation and Maverick are getting now. But Aprilia, they're not overflowing with money. They don't have a massive title sponsor like Monster to come in. You know, all of these things have to be considered. And time will tell, won't it? Time will tell if he's made the right decision. But it's definitely a big call. I think that's safe to say. And, you know, he's got to get on and do it now. He's got to, you know, he knows he's at Yamaha for the next 2 years. He knows the situation now. They've got the concessions. Unfortunately, the test of Portimao didn't happen, did it?
But yeah, true.
They've got to get out there. He's got to, you know, take this project by the horns, lead it, drag it forward, and get the bike back to the front.
Yep. And going just from Yamaha's statement, Rob, their second paragraph said that keeping Quartararo was their top priority. It wasn't about the bike. It was keeping him. And if they had lost him at the end of this year, you know, what would have happened for Yamaha? Because it's a whole now what if, because you can imagine that Alex Rins is going to stay on next year as well. And he will have that option, and it'll be the same continuity for them. How big of a, you know, statement is that for Yamaha to even throw the money down, from what we believe, just to go, yeah, this is it?
It's a huge commitment from Yamaha. It's one I think they needed to make, because there aren't many riders of Quattro's ability on the grid. And to have one in their lineup whilst they're going through these struggles, but to be able to retain him, I think shows that Yamaha presented a project idea to Quattro that suggests, you know, we know we're not where we are, but we know how to get to where we need to be. And I think from their perspective, if they'd lost Quattro, it would have sort of been, I guess, what Honda are going through without Marc Marquez, because Quattro, I think, is slowly rising into that role that Marquez had at Honda, and Yamaha are seeing that Quartararo is their man. You know, there's a lot of other great riders, but could they join Yamaha and produce the way Quartararo is with that bike? Because even in the races this season, you know, they've struggled for one lap pace still, like last year. But then, you know, Rins has been close to Quartararo at the beginning of races, but then the distance between them at the end of the race, that experience and that ability Quartararo has got is making a huge difference. And everyone, I think, in the paddock believes that Alex Rins is a great rider, but he's even showing that it's very difficult to match Quartararo at the moment, even though the bike isn't great. So I think, like Pete said, it's a big statement. It's a big move from Quartararo to stay, but I think it's even bigger from Yamaha to secure him. I think if they hadn't, they may have gone the route Honda have gone down, trying to sign someone like a Johann Zarco with experience to try and then develop the bike again. But then that would have just set the project back to even further.
Yeah, you look at like the likes of Jorge Martin, for example, even too, you know, could he have even be, say, if Quartararo said, I'm off and I'm leaving at the end of this year, would Yamaha throw the money at someone like him? Would they have even looked into Moto2? You know, it was a very interesting piece of the puzzle that's kind of just fitted, and it surprised me so early on. And now I think it makes it a bit clearer, Pete, for the grid going into next year. Because like we said, we talked about Aprilia and we'll stay with them. For me, it feels like they want that next rider that's going to elevate this project. Could we see the likes of Enea Bastianini, Jorge Martin move into their team for next year? Because we know that Martin wants factory status. He wants to be the rider. Is this a possibility now that Quartararo is eliminated from that?
I think, as you guys have just been saying, that Yamaha would have gone for someone like Jorge Martin, and they would have had the financial firepower, should we say, if they hadn't have signed Quartararo, to maybe do that. To say, okay, the bike is not the best, but you'll be a factory rider, and here's a big lump of money to go with it as well. That's not going to happen now, is it? So the second rider at Yamaha, they're not going to get anything like you would imagine what Quartararo has got. There just won't be the budget for it. So yeah, it's going to reduce the pull factor for a rider to go to Yamaha. And the young guys that you guys have mentioned there at Ducati, Aprilia, that might have gone across to be a satellite rider, that it's not going to be quite as attractive now, is it? Also because you'll be joining very much Fabio's team, let's face it.
True.
You know, which again, riders are always a little bit uncomfortable about, aren't they? But yeah, so coming to Aprilia, Massimo Rivola, they've said publicly the same as KTM, which is we want to keep the riders we've got now. Now, of course, that's in an ideal world, shall we say, and that assumes that all of those riders are performing well and everything else. Now, he then went on to say, this was in the preseason at Sepang, that he has to be ready to react. You know, if someone takes one of our riders, as he put it, I have to be ready to go into the market and know what's going on and be able to get someone else in. They're kind of hedging their bets a bit. He did make clear that the reason why he said that he wants to keep the four riders is the stability angle. You know, the fact that if you change a rider, you also change maybe the crew chief, sometimes the mechanics. It's why we usually, you only really see a factory team change one rider at a time, don't you?
It's quite rare
that they completely change across the, because to put two new riders in, especially if they're new to the bike, That's a pretty big shot potentially, isn't it? And you might go completely the wrong way on direction and everything else. So I think if we sort of follow that logic, Aprilia are going to want to keep at least one rider that they've got now. And I think that also fits with looking at some of the names that are already signed, the Quartararos, the Bagnaias, everything else. And then, it's the second rider maybe. It's going to depend on how they're performing. This will be the interesting thing with Kota, won't it? Because we've had Aleix doing fantastically really in Qatar, apart from the race result, but speed-wise. Impressing. Then Vinales came along and did great in Portimao. What's going to happen this time? Will he go back to Aleix? Will they both be up there? Will Vinales continue this fall? Will Oliveira pop up? You know, he's kind of been there, hasn't he? As a waiting to go into the factory team, if you like, if he can repeat that sort of form he's had at KTM. So they've got a lot of options, I think, at Aprilia. Bastianini, of course, the Italian rider. I think it's a good thing to raise that name, because that's the one thing he's got that they haven't got in Aprilia at the moment, isn't it? Is an Italian rider. And when you look at Ducati, I mean, you can say, why does that matter? But look at Ducati. When was the last time they didn't have an Italian rider? I mean, I don't know if they've ever had, actually, in MotoGP. They've always had one Italian in the factory team. So I think that would be good for them. It might even help with sponsorship. Who knows? But a lot, if you're Bastianini, we don't know what's going to happen yet with his ride, do we? We're looking at Kota. He's a former winner, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he'd be what he's had a decent start to the year, hasn't he? Much better, obviously, than last year when he was injured. But I mean, he's who knows what he might do this weekend. So I think the first thing for someone like Bastianini is what, you know, how safe is his position at the factory team against guys like Martin, Marc Márquez, Bez, potentially if he comes onto form. And then it's what's the pull factor from Aprilia? You know, how much do Aprilia want another rider compared to being, let's say, happy with the guys they've got?
Exactly. It's very valid points you make, Pete. I think even factored in, like you say, Massimo Ribola wants to keep the four riders, but, you know, at least Espargaro could potentially say, I've had enough, and he could finish. There's that angle too. And it's so interesting, you know, because Aprilia are probably going, okay, well, Quartararo's gone, but they're like, well, Jorge Martin seems a bit, how can we put it with Ducati? There's a bit of tension there. And yeah, I don't know. Who knows? It could just be even a Bastianini-Martin switch.
If I could just come in quickly there, because you raised a good point there, Jordan. I think coming back to that 4 million, I think that tells you that Aprilia, if we assume that's true, that they weren't going all out for Quartararo.
Yeah.
So that also tells you that they're maybe happy with, either with who they've got or that they've got someone else in mind, doesn't it? It doesn't sound like a, you know, we're going all out to get this guy kind of pay package, does it? So I think that tells you also that they've got something else that they're working on, maybe. But time will tell.
Yeah, it is very interesting because I don't know. I just think something with Bastianini and Aprilia, there's something there. I really do. Because I even think Massimo Ribola said, I think I've talked to you about this before, Pete. He said the GP1 in, I think it was Malaysia in the test. And he's like, oh, Bastianini, we like him. You know, he said to the Italian guys, you know, someone we've looked at. Why would you say that? You know, like, he's not your rider yet. Yeah, of course, he's a great rider. But why would you say that about someone who's potentially not knowing where he's going to go for his factory, say the Ducati? Very interesting. So
I think what's also quite interesting is we probably all expected Martin to be the first sort of domino to fall.
From
other teams and riders to come from what happened with Martin just because of the environment with him and Ducati. But now that it's Quartararo who's stayed at Yamaha, I think that actually has a big impact on Martin potentially staying with Ducati. And I think it does open that door. If Bastianini's seat is sort of in question at the factory team, like Pete said, the ties of him being Italian, and then like you said, Jordan, with potentially Aleix retiring, which has been getting maybe closer with every season. So I think there's a lot of legs to Bastianini potentially moving to Aprilia if he feels his seat is in danger.
Yeah, it's such a weird part of the year because it's not even like Aleix kind of doesn't deflect it, Pete. He just kind of always brings it up himself. He's like, you know, if I'm not enjoying it, I'm not going to do anything, but he seems that he's enjoying it. And, you know, Aprilia would want to keep that. He's their team captain, essentially, isn't he? And yeah, very interested for this one. I think it's going to be a very good story to look at. And we'll probably know more after this weekend, you know, judging by results, if Bastianini has a good weekend or the Aprilias have a good weekend. Who knows? Oliveira could end up getting promoted. We don't even know. It could be something like that.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Focusing on this weekend, the COTA. It's a great circuit. We've had it on the calendar since 2013. And one man essentially had dominated for a long time. Then we had, you know, a few other race winners in there. Marc Márquez has won 7 races. And Alex Rins has got 2, and Enea Bastianini has 1. And looking at last year's race, Pete, it was a, how can we put it? It was Honda's best moment of the year. And could you even imagine if Alex Rins, say for example, would go on, went on a Suzuki around Coda, went on a Honda, and then went on a Yamaha? That would be something, wouldn't it?
It would indeed. And you know what? You wouldn't completely rule it out. I mean, it's as you say, by his record, he's won twice in MotoGP. I think he might have won in Moto2 as well. Certainly, he's one of those guys that... That's right, is it? Yeah. He's one of those guys that that suits the track. It's one of those tracks where the rider can make a bigger difference maybe than other tracks. And it's different, isn't it? It's quirky. It's a long track. It's anti-clockwise. And Mark likes it because it's anti-clockwise.
Yeah.
We have the surface that's usually a bit bumpy. It's pretty slippery, dirty at the start of the weekend. I think there might have been some resurfacing again ahead of this weekend.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, so that always throws another uncertainty into the mix as well. You never quite know what's going to happen, but it does certainly... some riders really like it. Mark, obviously, Rins, Bastianini, as we've mentioned, the former winners. And then there's other guys that don't, and Aleix being one of them. He's never really got on with the place, and it never used to suit the Aprilia, but he went quite well last year. And it's quite interesting for a team to see how they perform at their worst tracks. And that's why it'll be a big weekend for Vinales, Aleix, all of the Aprilia guys, to know, you know, what will this high downforce 24 bike be like through all of those sort of medium speed S's. They might have a real advantage there, or it might be that the bike is actually there's too much downforce that they can't flick it from side to side. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. You've got that massive 1.2 kilometer straight. I think it's the longest in MotoGP, isn't it? Not the fastest, because it's a tight corner coming onto it, but it's certainly the longest. And last time I was there, the massive braking bumps at the end of it.
Yeah, it's really bumpy.
You know, guys braking basically on the front wheel for half of the braking zone. As both of you, I think, have said previously, it's another unknown, isn't it, weekend. We've had three of them to start the year. And, after this, we go when we start the European season, where everything's a bit more settled. Jerez, where all the teams have done private testing and all that kind of thing. Nobody will have done a MotoGP lap at Cota, will they, since last year? So it's going to be a real, real interesting one, I think. Yeah, but Mark, I mean, can he add another one? I mean, if there's going to be a place to do it, who knows? And just finally coming back to Roy Martin, as you guys were saying, almost a forgotten man, isn't he? Leading the world championship.
He is, yeah.
I mean, he's fixed the one thing that he needed, which was consistency, wasn't it? And not making mistakes. And he's done that so far, and he's got a decent lead. And we're all not talking about it because there's been all this other stuff going on. But really, Martin's had a fantastic start to the year. If he continues it this weekend, he could be making a bit of a break there, couldn't he?
Exactly. No, I do apologise to our listeners. I've seen a few comments. It's not Jorge Martin's fault. There's no agenda against him, guys. there's just been so much that's happening, and I think he's been so good and consistent, and I think ideally he wants it that way. No one really talking about him, because he can just get on with his job. And I do promise, in the next podcast, we'll talk about him in the Grand Prix no matter what. Whatever happens, he will get a section to himself, because he is the world championship leader, as Pete says, and he's been magnificent. You know, he hasn't been off the podium, am I right saying that? In every single race, he's...
Pretty sure, yeah. And he's had one win on each of the weekends, one sprint and one Grand Prix win. Yeah, he's been the guy that's
been brilliant.
He's been consistent, yeah, exactly. You know, we knew he had the speed, didn't we? We always knew that, but there was the mistakes that were sort of creeping in last year that cost him, particularly at the beginning of the year. And he's got rid of them. He's done exactly what he needed to do. So all credit to Martin and Pramac at the moment. And let's see what happens this weekend.
Exactly. Right, Rob, we're going to talk about Marc Marquez. So, like I said, 7 race wins on a Honda around here. He was on that unbelievable streak before he had that technical issue in 2019 where he crashed out of the lead. Then came back and won in 21. Then had the issue in 2022. You know, it was... The race he came back from when he had the episode of diplopia from that big crash in Mandalika, he qualified, I think it was 8th place. It was his worst qualifying run in the circuit. Then at the start, he had a massive glitch with the electronics or the start, and he dropped all the way to the back and then fought through. I think he finished in 6th place.
Yeah, it was 6th place.
So he hasn't been on, and he missed last year, of course, because of the injury that he sustained in the first round of the year. So he hasn't been here for 2 years. He's coming on a new bike. It's not his Honda that he loves around this circuit. Realistically, he's on the best bike. He has the data from last year. He can look at that. It's coming to the track that he loves alongside the Sachsenring and a few others. Surely, it couldn't be not an open goal for him. It's set up to be nicely put for him to get his first wins or win this weekend.
I think he has to be eyeing up a win at the very least. Now that there's the added element of the sprint. I think if Marquez doesn't win at least one of the races, I think he would leave Cota disappointed because, you know, take everything aside, what's happened in the last few years, his record at that circuit is phenomenal. There's no rider on their day who's been able to really, really match Marquez. And we talk about consistency with Martin. Mark's consistency at that circuit has been incredible.
Yeah.
And aside from what happened in Portimao on the crash with Bagnaia, not to the same degree as Martin, but he's also been very consistent this season, whether it's qualifying or the races. Mark's always been up there and shown an ability to be in the top five. And that's while learning the bike at two circuits that aren't his best. You know, only one victory in Qatar since joining MotoGP, and he's not won in Portimao. So for him to be that strong going into Cota, which is a circuit that he absolutely loves, and he's just got a unique ability around that circuit to just make, you know, at times bad Honda bikes do miraculous things. And I think now that he's on the best bike and a bike that is a lot more consistent and will just give him the feel he needs around that circuit. And it's a bike that other Ducati riders have been strong with at that circuit. So I think everything lines up for him to win one of the races. He's shown he can be strong in the sprints and the Grand Prix. So there's not one format that really suits him better. So I think if he can qualify well, which he should, I think Mark will be looking at winning one of the races. And I think he will.
I agree. And Pete, you know, just looking back at his Honda record at Cota, when you think of, like as Rob said, he was able to mask the bad bike essentially. When you think back to what his last win was in 2021, you know, he was still struggling with his arm. That Honda was a difficult bike to ride. He didn't qualify on pole. He was on the front row. As soon as the lights went out, he took the lead and he disappeared. And I personally think, other than him, maybe his first win that he had, obviously become the youngest ever MotoGP winner in his second ever race. That was actually 11 years ago yesterday, funny enough. That was a good start. His best ride at Cota was when he was actually at his worst physically. And with the bike that was really difficult to ride. So do you think, you know, going back to just what he was able to do in terms of anti-clockwise tracks, he loves left-handed corners, and the fact that he tested at Cota when he was a rookie as well, they done that random test, I remember, it was like all the factory Yamaha riders and the Honda riders. There's something about this place that just, it just is made for him, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a bit of a sort of a scrappy place, isn't it? As we were saying, bumpy, different surfaces, slippery, all the things that Mark is sort of a dirt tracker kind of likes, isn't it? And it all seemed to come together with the late braking as well. It's quite stop and going places, isn't it? When you look at the map, it looks quite flowing. And but it might be in a Formula One car with loads of downforce, but with the bikes, it's not really as fast as it looks on paper, is it? The corners towards the end of the lap are quick, but a lot of the S's are sort of second, third gear, I think. And and Mark was always just able to wrestle the bike around, wasn't he? Now, it's going to be interesting to see with the Ducati, because he's not really been wrestling the bike, has he? He's sort of just been looking smooth and everything else. So how will that adapt to this track? But as Rob was saying, it's hard to believe that Mark's going to be anything other than fast this weekend. I think there's no, you know, every time he gets on the bike, he's going up a level. It's almost, he and Acosta are sort of learning their two bikes at the same time, aren't they? And every time they go out, they get better. They both got almost the same problem, which is qualifying, as you guys have said. So for both of them, I put Acosta in a similar group. He's not going to suffer so much from the whole rookie inexperience, if you like, at Cota, because a lot of the Grand Prix riders don't have that much experience, you know, one visit a year. Obviously, the Cota years, there weren't the races there either. So I think it's the kind of track where, as we said, the rider can make difference as long as the bike is somewhere near. And as you guys have said, the Ducati has won there previously. It's been fast there. So I think everything's there for Mark to do well. But yeah, qualifying is going to be key. The boring old front tire temperature thing that probably held him back in Portimao, that'll be an issue again, won't it? If you have to follow someone through all of those left rights, you can imagine the front tire pressure is going to get pretty high. So yeah, qualifying is going to be a big part of the weekend, I think, for anybody really, but especially for Mark to avoid those front tire pressure problems. And if he can get to the front early, as you were saying, Jordan, and his previous win, I mean, you wouldn't count out him doing that again, getting to the front and disappearing, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and even like you say, that was maybe, 3 years ago, so MotoGP's changed a lot, but we've seen in the Grand Prix, Jorge Martin, Paco Bagnaia, they've hit the front and they've just went. Like, no one can really catch them. They've kept up such great pace, and who knows? It could be that again this weekend for the actual Grand Prix. I imagine the sprint will be quite chaotic. It always is, but I think that'll be one to watch. And going back to the sprint last year, Pecco Bagnaia, Rob, actually won the sprint, and I think it's kind of forgot as he, you know, that disaster in the Grand Prix, crashed out and Alex Rins won. But, you know, Ducati have a good record around here. I seem to remember, I think it was 2014, Pete, they got their first podium, wasn't it, around... So there was something, it was a podium for Ducati after so many, like a long gap, essentially. Dovizi got it.
Yes, yeah. Right, so, yeah, after the Rossi era sort of thing.
That's right, yeah.
Right.
It was the first one with Gigi in there, that's what I remember.
Right.
Rob, just the point is, Ducati are, no matter what, in the 10 years, they have a good record around here. They might not have won races because of Marc Marquez winning on the Honda, but they do have a solid record. They've won with Andrea Bastianini, of course.
Yeah, it's... Obviously, you know, Ducati had that period where, as they were building and getting stronger, it was the sort of era where Marquez was winning his championships, and it was pretty much with Argentina, this part of the year was where Marc sort of won his couple of races and then started to build an early sort of championship lead. But they've been getting much stronger, and that's shown even last year, because Bagnaia was superb in the sprint.
Yeah.
And he actually, through his ability and his performance, sort of made it quite an uneventful sprint race.
Yeah, that's right.
And then in the Grand Prix, he was obviously looking set to do the same. He had pressure from Rins, but he was slowly, very slowly starting to pull away, sort of eking out a gap to about a second, and then he crashed at turn two, which is one of the most problematic corners on that track.
Yeah.
For, you know, we talked about the bumps. There was that year where it sort of completely dipped and the bikes were almost falling off.
21, yeah.
As they went through it.
The only two riders that weren't complaining were Jack Miller and Marc Marquez, funny enough. So they didn't care at all. They were loving it.
No surprise it was those two who didn't mind it. But I think if you coincide Ducati's rise, the riders they've got now, the recent performances they've put in, and the fact that they've got Marc Marquez in their lineup now, it's four pretty huge areas that they've made steps forward with, or that have changed from a few years ago, that have all aligned to, you know, every circuit we go to now. There used to be that saying that some tracks would be sort of favorable to Ducati, and then there would be the sort of Yamaha Honda track.
Yep.
But every track is a Ducati track now. And I think if it's not Marc Marquez who wins this weekend, there's a fairly good chance it's going to be another Ducati rider. So I think that they're, from a manufacturer's point of view, in a great position. And Bagnaia will obviously, from a personal perspective, want to put Portimao behind him. And you know, we mentioned about Martin's lead at the championship. He's got nearly, I think, 30 points over Bagnaia already.
He does, yeah.
So Bagnaia will want a big weekend as well.
Yeah. Rob says, Pete, it's a massive weekend for the factory Ducati team. You know, Bagnaia's playing catch-up to his rival that he doesn't want to let out of sight. And he was going so well in the Grand Prix last year. And I believe, was this the race where he said the bike was maybe too stable and that's why he crashed? And a lot of people were like, what do you mean? So your bike is too good and you crashed on it? But it was taken out of context, and he will want to write, he will want to get rid of that demon, essentially, won't he, this weekend?
Exactly, yeah, John. I mean, he was really annoyed, wasn't he? Put aside why the accident happened or who was to blame, if anyone, for the accident in Portimao. It was the fact he came away with 0 points. He knew that was the last thing that he needed at this stage in the championships. Yeah, he's going to want to come straight back from that. And we've seen Pecco do that a lot, haven't we?
Yeah.
When he's had... You're talking about last year and then bounce straight back from it and put it all behind him. He's very good at sort of hitting the reset, not letting things drag on in the back of his mind. So you wouldn't be surprised if he comes out, you know, all firing this weekend and he's back up there. But you know, he's going to have a lot of other fast Ducatis up there to fight against. Brad Binder second in the World Championship on the KTM. I mean, there was a lot of guys that crashed in the race last year, wasn't there? It was a bit like Portimao this year.
It was a scrappy race, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Martin fell, didn't he, and took out Alex Marquez. He was having a good weekend.
That. Yeah, that's true.
Jack Miller, I think, was sort of in the podium back when he fell. Brad Binder fell. You know, Bagnaia that you've already mentioned as well. So it was one of those ones that saw a lot of riders down. And yeah, a lot of people caught out. Let's see this weekend. I think the other thing to remember is, you know, if Mark had stayed on two wheels, he'd be what? Maybe second in the World Championship now? Second, third,
maybe?
He'd be
in the top four, definitely. He'd be right up there.
Right, yeah. So I mean, you know, at this early stage, I just think that, you know, the others, yeah, they're going to be obviously worried by Martin's performance. But I think, you know, for Mark already, after two races, to potentially be in the top three, if he hadn't have gone down, it's all ifs. But
yep.
It shows that the speed is there. And, yeah, let's see this weekend. And yeah, and Vinales, of course, who had such a good weekend. We've mentioned him already, but he likes Cota, I think. I think he's one of the guys. Yeah, so, you know, he's coming there. He's coming from the high of going so well in Portimao. It's a track he likes. And we know when Vinales is in that sort of frame of mind of everything's going well, he can be tough to stop as well.
I always think of Maverick and Cota together. It's when he was on the Yamaha first year. It was a great qualifying session between him and Marc Marquez, and it was seen as like he's the one to beat Marc Marquez, and I think he crashed on lap three. Who did, and that kind of not derailed his 2017 season, but it was like the first sort of, oh wow, Maverick kind of showing a weakness, and then obviously whatever happened that year and the journey with Yamaha. But he does like this circuit. He's always been quick around it, and it suits his riding style. You know, that middle sector and the first sector, how flowing it is. He's very good at that. So I do think Maverick's a real. He's a good shout for a podium this weekend. We haven't actually talked about Enea Bastianini, Rob. Missed it last year due to injury, of course. Won in 2022. And, you know, it's a circuit where saving your tyre is always so crucial. And he's very good at that. That is his real strength. And it seems that with the GP24, he's kind of went back to the old habit. He feels that he can do that again, so he's definitely one to watch as well, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, he showed when he got back last season from the injury, it's a few races at the end of the season, that he was able to your point, show that late race pace. And I mean, his pace in Portimao was stunning later.
Yeah.
And it's sort of becoming a regular theme that he's setting fastest laps with, what is it, like 2, 3, 4 laps to go.
Yeah, he just does it, yeah.
And some of it might be a case of it's a lot of pace a little bit too late, but he's mentioned himself, he struggled a little bit in the early laps, especially compared to Bagnaia, to be as consistent and to be as aggressive. But his consistency this season has been really, really good. I've been very impressed by Bastianini. And like you said, he's the only Ducati rider to win at Cota. So he's got that.
Although the Bagnaia and the sprint last year, obviously, but at a Grand Prix since, yeah.
Yeah, in the Grand Prix. So Bastianini, like with Qatar at the beginning of the season, will go there with good memories now that he's fully fit. And he showed again what he could do when he's fit last season on a bike that he didn't really gel with. Even when he got back, he never really gelled with, to the point that he's already more comfortable on the 24
yep.
machine. So I think this will be a big round for him as well. And if Mark isn't able to win one of the races, I think Bastianini, especially in the Grand Prix, because to your point about sort of the length of the circuit, the type of circuit it is, and the fact that it's so hard on tyres, Bastianini will be a rider that I think late on will have a say in the Grand Prix.
Yeah, I think he's a real dark horse, and I wouldn't surprise me if it was between him and Marc Marquez. It's just the characteristics and just their riding styles. It seems that Bastianini, he's very, how can I say, his riding style is very different. It looks different, but the way he's able to use the front tire and stuff, how he just sits on it when he turns into the corner, it's amazing. And it's made for him around here. So I'm excited for that aspect of the Ducati riders. If there's not Bagnaia, Marquez, still have Bastianini to look at. And Martin, I'll not forget him because people will get angry, of course. But yeah, let's focus on Yamaha briefly. It's actually been an okay circuit for Yamaha in the past, Pete. Quartararo scored a podium in 23 last year. 21 scored a podium. And Alex Rins is there, who loves this place. So it might actually not be a bad weekend for Yamaha.
No, that's right. I mean, and, you know, Portimao, they were straight into Q2, weren't they? Directly on the Friday, which is also, even though it was a dusty and slippery track, which kind of is, you know, we assume
in their favor,
it might be the same conditions again in Cota, being it's a sort of little used track, if you like. It might be slippery on the Friday. So again, they might get both the guys through. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Can Rins, you guys were pointing out, yeah, Quartararo has been the dominant guy at Yamaha. Could this be the weekend where Rins, you know, does sort of take the lead a bit and put Quartararo under a bit of pressure for that number one in the team situation? Because as you've said about his record at Cota, I mean, he's clearly a guy, I don't know whether the Cota specialist counts, but he's somebody that obviously knows how to ride very fast around this track. And, you know, last year, it wasn't just a one-off on the Sunday, was it? As you said, second in the sprint, he qualified well as well. He was just fast all weekend. So there was no, it wasn't a fluke or anything. He was just flying that weekend pretty much throughout. So let's see what he can do on the Yamaha. It'd be interesting, won't it? He was saying after Portimao, he needed to make the bike more of his own.
Yeah.
He'd been running the Quartararo setup. And fortunately for him, that's what he wanted to work on at the Monday test. He wasn't that bothered by trying new parts. He just thinks that they need to work on a bit of setup stuff and try and get the bike turning better. So missed out on a chance to do that. But let's see, you know, if he can make the bike turn as he wants at Cota, because, yeah, he clearly knows what he needs to do to go faster.
Yeah, no, I just looked at my stats here. He is a Coda specialist. He's won in every single class. So Moto 3, he won. Moto 2, Moto GP. So Alex Rins, other than Marc Marquez, he is the specialist around here. And yeah, as Pete says, could be a good weekend for Yamaha. Who knows? Just touching on KTM quickly. Binder, Miller, Acosta, and Augusto, who has been struggling, of course. What can we expect from them this weekend? Rob, Acosta just trying to continue what he's been doing, and Binder and Miller trying to look past a difficult kind of weekend they had in Portimao.
Yeah, I think for Binder and Miller, especially Binder, we sort of expect them to be a little bit stronger than they were in Portimao, especially coming off the high in Qatar with Binder finishing second twice. He is second in the World Championship, and you know that bike is fundamentally very fast. So they know they're going to have a good package anywhere they go. And I think Binder, he is obviously very consistent a lot of the time, aside from the odd maybe crash or incident that might occur. But I think Binder's got a great chance to be back in the thick of it this weekend. I think the KTM should be strong. I think the circuit, especially with the fast straights, should lend itself to benefit the KTM. And then Acosta, I think, is just going to be a case of take it in his stride. I think Pedro Acosta will be very, very strong, potentially the top KTM again this weekend, because he's going to go there. It's the sort of track that, you know, it's got all its different quirks. There's that third sector with sort of the go-kart section as well, which you could just see Acosta being good at. And it will take someone who's aggressive to pull off some overtakes, which he's shown an ability to do. So I think, you know, his natural ability will sort of push KTM forward. And I think Binder will obviously want to cement himself at the top of the championship and have a good weekend after struggling a little bit more than we anticipated at Portimao.
Yep, no, I totally agree. And Pete, just focus in again. It's Honda's, how good are Honda really around this circuit? That's no disrespect to them, because their bike was good in the early years of Marc Marquez and Danny Pedrosa and stuff. But, you know, since, 2019, we can just say from when Mark crashed out, and of course he's able to mask the ability. Are they going to be quick around here? And yes, Rins did win out last year, but he is a specialist with Coda as well. So are Honda just looking to just have a better weekend and try to understand that bike a bit more?
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to know is that they can get some sort of rear grip. I mean, it's just, this is all you're hearing from the Honda riders is the rear grip. Now, as you say, whether it was just Marquez's style, Rins' style, that they were able to overcome that lack of grip at Kota previously through the braking zones, you know, working the front harder, whether the deficiencies of the Honda in the rear won't count so much here. It's hard to know now, isn't it, how it's going to work out. But certainly so far this year, the story at Honda has just been rear grip. And everything they've tried has not really made a big bite into that. Luca Marini says he's also missing a bit of turning. You know, he's had a tough time, doesn't he, coming into the Repsol Honda team so far. Yep. So he thinks it's not just as simple as the sort of the lack of traction out of the corners. It's also he's having a bit of trouble turning and that kind of thing. As you guys have said, it's a long track. Was it 20 corners? I mean, yes, if you're struggling to turn and you're struggling, there's nowhere to hide, is there? And which way it will go is really hard to know. And it might be that in certain conditions, for example, with qualifying, when they've got a lot of grip, they might be fine. But when the grip starts to go down, and as Rob mentions, this can be a bit of a tire wear race.
Yeah.
So, by the end of the race, there might not be a lot of grip left. That might be when they really start to suffer. But it's going to be, perhaps more interesting is going to be to look at also the inter-Honda battle. We've seen that Zarco has sort of been leading it, then Mir takes over, and then, you know, they've sort of been going to see. So there's a healthy competition there, isn't there, between those two guys? So let's see how that continues, Kota. Because Mir's, you know, he's, despite the rear grip issue, he has pulled off some decent laps and things, isn't he, that have made people sit up and say, yeah, you know, this guy is a former world champion, don't forget.
Yeah, it's crazy when you say that. You know, you're like, yeah, don't forget he did win a world championship as well. But yeah, no, Mir's been good this year. I really have been impressed with his sort of progression. And even, like you say, some factors in Portimao. His race was ruined by Morbidelli, and he fought back through still to finish inside the points. And he has, you know, it's a big contract year for him too, because he needs to show, essentially, like you say, why he is the world champion from the past. And yeah, I think, if he would put money on it, I think he'll be the top Honda this week. And yeah, let's see what happens, because we don't know with Honda. Quickly, we'll just get predictions for the sprint and the Grand Prix. Rob, you can give me your sprint and Grand Prix winner.
So I'm going to go with Marc Marquez to win the sprint.
Okay.
And Bastianini to win the Grand Prix.
Okay, do you know what? That's fair. Pete, what is your picks?
Yeah, I think also Mark for the sprint. I'll go with our forgotten championship leader, Martin, for the Sunday one, though. There
Jordan
we are.
Was waiting to throw that in on his prediction.
Yeah, do you know what? I think it will be Jorge Martin that will win the sprint. So he will. And I think it will be Marquez on the podium there with, let's say, Bagnaia as well. So it'll be those three on the podium. But I think Marc Marquez is going to win the Grand Prix. I just think it's going to be a mentality switch. I think he's seen the first two races and he's seen what Pecco and Jorge have done. They've just got the pace and they've gone. Marc has shown he has had the good pace, but he's struggled with, like you say, beat the front tyre. I think if he gets out front and he qualifies well, different thing on the Grand Prix. He's just going to go and push. So yeah, Marc Marquez for me will win the Grand Prix. But we don't know what's going to happen. It's just one of those weekends. It's always an interesting circuit. It's just it's a quirky weekend. And I'm looking forward to it. But if you've enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us, subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Leave us a review on Spotify, Apple. Much appreciated. If you've watched on YouTube, leave a comment. Give us your predictions as well. Like the video, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and yeah, we'll see you in the next one.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.